Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and one of our favorite Paradigm Shifters is Master Dwal Cool, who comes through another wonderful being called Kathleen Kingdon. So I'm very grateful to have you back on the air with us, Kathleen. How are you tonight?
I'm well, and I'm delighted to be doing this again. We always have a lot of fun, don't we?
We sure do, and people have been asking, and the times have been changing so fast that we had it down for, I think, the 17th, but I lost you and you lost me, and that isn't atypical of these days, is it?
Well, I think these are times when a lot of things are being shaken up, not only in the world, but certainly in our personal lives as well. And one of the things that I notice is that people's sense of time is actually a little bit warped right now. And so they'll say, oh, was that just yesterday I told you that? I thought, that we agreed to do this. I thought that was 2 weeks ago. Or I know, and when I suddenly realized that it had been 3 months past the Fukushima situation, I was shocked. I felt like it was 2 weeks ago because I had been spending some time in meditation trying to bless and heal Japan for, you know, twice a day for all that time. So it's, you know, depending on how our attention wraps around the events that we're experiencing, whether we see it as a whole lot going on, which most of us do, mm-hmm. or whether we see just these isolated events now and then, basically it can have an effect on our consciousness that feels like our sense of time has been warped. And so anyway, it's not boring, is it?
Not at all. In fact, there's a part of it that's kind of exciting. Like, for example, with Japan, the number of people that have, like you and the wonderful groups that you lead that start with online, but the number of beings who have tuned in and created consciousness and support, I really think is amazing. And the Japanese people are real models of working as a collective that's got some kind of positive goal, aren't they?
Well, yes. And, the interesting thing is that we're not quite 75 years past the first nuclear holocaust, which, of course, the U.S. Caused, although we won't get into the pros and cons of war. But nonetheless, when you stop and think about it, that it hasn't even been 75 years yet since that first event. Well, actually, it was two events, but the healing that had to come out of that was incredible. And now, to have this be happening all over again, but at their own hands, not at the hands of some unspecified enemy across the waters, mm-hmm. I can't imagine what this must be like for people over there. And I just have so much compassion. It could have been us. One of our nuclear reactors could have gone too. In fact, some have in the past, perhaps not because of a earthquake and tsunami, but the world has become too small for us to feel righteous about anything these days. We have to recognize that whatever's happening anywhere in the world is actually happening to us. And I see this as true about the people fighting for their freedom in the Middle East, as I do the thing in Japan. It's, I think if anything, maybe the Earth is giving us a call to really get out of our tendencies to stay in the small picture around our egos mm-hmm. and step out into a broader understanding.
I don't know about you, but I see and hear from a lot of people that are really connected to even the Gulf, Japan, the Middle East, the tornadoes in America, and so on. People really seem to be taking it into their own personal hearts. So I think that's growth, isn't it?
And, that's great. We have to do it that way because we just can't count on leaders of any nation to make wise and particularly compassionate choices in this regard. Unfortunately, the lure of the monetary basis behind all of this, that's another, maybe another topic, but I think we just can't count on other people even leading us into compassionate ways. This is time for us to be mature spiritually and find our own journey into compassion and really use our minds and our hearts to try and mitigate their suffering, but also to support the earth. This cannot be easy for Gaia, our planet, either. So,
well, it is interesting that the head of the International Monetary Fund, it is interesting to me that as all of these incredible earth tragedies or awakenings or whatever they are keep happening, also all of the systems are showing their what clay feet. It's more than clay feet, isn't it? They're showing the lying, cheating, swindling aspect of things. So all of it's kind of irradiating right now, isn't it? It doesn't matter how you look, all the systems are coming apart.
I think they are. And, you know, I think they have to, actually. While it doesn't maybe sound like a lot of fun to rebuild all of that, I do believe that, you know, we in the United States are really no longer a compassionate nation. There's an awful lot of compassionate people in this nation.
Right.
But the nation as a whole has a bottom line for everything, and it went not too long ago I heard somebody from the Pentagon responding to a question about Libya. And, well, he said, yeah, we do feel bad about the people, but it's not really about the people. We have to secure our oil needs and so on and so forth. And when people are ready to just say that, it, you know, it shows that there's no sense that maybe it should be another way.
Well, and also I heard that a Saudi prince said that they wanted to lower the cost of oil because they wanted to America to keep its oil addiction strong.
I don't think we're any danger of getting over that soon.
But it's actually pretty, it's a pretty powerful statement for news, isn't it?
Oh, of course. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, we begin to see maybe what's been there all along in terms mm-hmm. of manipulation, but now we can see it blatantly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's everywhere. Every time you listen to a news program or just read reports online, and this is the credible ones, and, you know, we probably don't even know which ones are totally credible and which ones are not. But still, the accountings that we get, we can just see this kind of blatant disregard for the care of other, whatever other is. You know, for some people, they don't like animals, and so animals are other. Some people don't like people of another race, so they make them other from themselves. Mm-hmm. And when that distinction of other, or I guess you could say it's the pushing of the envelope of duality, when it becomes the norm, then clearly something has to happen to kind of right the sinking ship.
Well, I guess we always used to think, I remember when we were kids, we used to think, well, what if the aliens come? Would we all get along? You know, now it's like, okay, the aliens are our attitudes that are kind of messing up the planet. Are we all going to learn to get along in order to save it? Does that make
sense? Well, I think, at least for me, I think that's why we're seeing the kinds of things that we're seeing. You know,
it's time.
I think the one thing we can all understand is the world we have today is not the world we thought we were going to have 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, boy. I'm eager to ask Master as well about 2012, and this is what it's taking. I guess nobody really knows how it's going to go because it depends on our attitudes and our collective movement, doesn't it?
I think so, but I'll get him and let you ask him directly. How's that?
Thank you, and it's wonderful to speak with you again, Kathleen.
Okay. Give me just a second or two here.
Okay.
Well, good evening.
Good evening. How wonderful to speak with you.
And it's delightful, as always, to speak with you as well, Veronica.
Thank you so much. We have a lot of questions for you tonight, hoping that you will have a perspective that can help us make peace with some of the swashbuckling changes in the systems, whether it's monetary or physical or animal or oil or media. Good grief. Weather.
I always like that phrase. Good grief. Can you tell me what it means? I used to say good grief. When people say good grief, I would say, if there is such a thing. Anyway.
Maybe it's just the dominance of the oxymoron. I don't know.
I think it is. Well, clearly, when you look about the world, it's very hard for anyone to miss that something is taking place that's bigger than any one human can handle, or any one, maybe even one planet can handle. And this is, it's an example of initiation. Now, when you think about spiritual initiation, often it comes about for an individual in some very traumatic conditions. Why? Well, most people have an ego, and that ego gets really locked in to something it deems a reference point. For example, I am the one who can do this and this and this. I am the one who doesn't like this color, who doesn't like this food, but who loves this food and loves this color. I am the one who, and on and on and on. Now, this all goes on at a very low level in consciousness. In fact, often it's beneath the conscious threshold. Mm. But the ego's identification with whatever reference points it uses to define itself are very interesting and difficult to shift. After all, that's how a person knows who he or she is in their life and in the world. But when they come to the point of initiation, basically that ego cage is rattled so traumatically that basically what falls away are the pillars that support those reference points. And if we look at it from a planetary standpoint, and we can assume that basically there is a pattern for evolution that's going on in this cosmic day, and that while it may not look exactly the same for a planet as it does for a person, certainly it's a different kind of consciousness, mm-hmm. but nonetheless, for a planet to break through and find its collective way into a new reality, it must also have its underpinnings really rattled. In fact, some of them will fall away. One of the things that has happened, now it happened mainly in the West, but the West has been very good at exporting it to every other country in the world.
How kind of us.
Yes, the ego, the individual ego got so big. And this makes it really kind of complicated when you have all of these individual egos trying to come together and form a national ego, or maybe even it could be a smaller unit, it could be a family ego or a school ego. I mean, my goodness, when it's time for sports to happen, the school ego can get very big, whether that's grade school, high school, college, whatever. That sense of the collective I is very powerful. And the interesting thing is that most people can fit their individual egos into this kind of a collective I, at least for the duration of the game. But when it goes to trying to understand what it is to have a planetary sense of identity, that gets much more complicated for most people. So what you have are all of these, may I call them national egos, mm-hmm. fighting for prominence. And if you happen to be in the U.S. right now, you'll notice that there's kind of two national egos. You call one Democrats and one Republicans. And there is space in between those two. But these two are very interesting in terms of trying to get the masses to identify with one of them or the other. And the idea is that one party could collect all of the stray egos out there that haven't landed yet and become so powerful it could just push the other one over. So we don't really see much of a we happening in the United States. And when it's election time, I think this is a fairly common thing all around the world. But you can see with so much vying, particularly well, even within the parties, if you look at within the Republican Party, you see people vying for power. You look on the other side of the fence, in the Democratic Party, you see the same thing. And this has nothing to do with the philosophical basis for either party. It has more to do with learned tactics. And what you see is that there is still a kind of a warring mentality. In fact, sometimes you can even see, particularly in treatment of the earth, that there is a kind of raping mentality that's driving the consciousnesses that are all frothed up and trying. You see, if you had real leaders stand up that really wanted to lead this nation or the whole planet from where it is into a new reality, it would be one thing. But in most cases, the whole notion of a statesman has completely gone by the wayside. Mm-hmm. Now you have people just trying to be reelected. Oh, yes, there are always a few who transcend that norm. But the norm is very powerful. And what happens is it becomes very difficult to create a true national we. Mm-hmm. But you see, here's where it gets very interesting. If we can go to war and make somebody else the enemy, then for some people who normally would have a real hard time with a national we, they can get into a national we. If somebody creates a 9/11 experience, then the people can come together to fight back. Not forgive, but fight back.
Well, and we thought Obama was going to lead that kind of unity, didn't we?
Didn't we? How mm-hmm. about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But that's a good example, it seems, of how the machine itself is what is divisive for the people and separates us from our ideals, don't you think?
Well, I do think that's true. But I have to also add one thing, that there's an old saying, you know, that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Good old Machiavelli.
Yes. And what we can see now is how that plays out at so many different levels within virtually all of the political systems. The ones who still have petty despots who are ruling only for their own good and taking advantage of the people that they've been given the responsibility to care for are perhaps the easiest to see. But what happens in the United States, you see, is you just don't talk about change anymore. Or you just, you don't talk about health care anymore. Or when the big votes come up on health care, you sort of desert your party and leave it to people like Harry Reid, who kind of took on a very tenuous place to support the health reform. And the end result is that nothing happens very much. I mean, the Republicans don't have a plan for health care. The Democrats are divided now on how they can, quote, sell, close quote, a plan that the public will buy. And when you begin to see all of the warring mentality, where it is one side trying to take power over the other side, then we say somewhere we've missed the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Real competition should be, can you imagine a football game where every player on the field helped every other player do his best?
Wow, that could be huge, couldn't it?
Yes. It would be a different game altogether.
It's really interesting. So the drive, a lot of us have read Matter of Mind and the series that you put out, and I can't remember what it's called now, but it was all about creating with your mind.
Yeah.
And very, very powerful. And I'm going, do you see that as we're more and more of us are learning to create with our mind, is that pushing that envelope a little bit? Are we managing to push? You see what I'm saying? Are we managing to project at a higher level, to push at a higher level so that we can create a different reality here, a unity?
Well, I would say that right now, all of the movement we've created has some, in some ways, this is kind of an interesting way to illustrate it, but if you can kind of think of it as pushing against the envelope of the status quo, which says we are helpless, we are victims of the reality in which we experience, and all of these things are happening to us from outside. Well, believe it or not, when one starts really working with one's mind in the ways that certainly I've been teaching these past few years rather pointedly, and many other spiritual teachers have as well, then something happens within the mind. It rebels. And sometimes it does it at a level where one can observe it, other times it doesn't. But with all of this shifting going on, and there is a lot of shifting, so with all of that going on, we are really setting the field for what will come next. Okay. And we don't know what that is yet, because right now there is a huge tug of war. I think you can see it all in the political arena. It so graphically displays what's really trying to happen for the planet. Mm-hmm. In that, just take the healthcare thing that we talked about a moment ago. One side has no plan other than to say that the other side is wrong, and the other side is so busy trying to do a salesmanship thing that neither one is really looking out for the people. And so when you see that going on, it's so illustrative of what's happening mm-hmm. at a planetary level. Mm-hmm. What you see, perhaps, is that those who rule nations from the point of the petty despot seem to be a little bit stronger. Some of them are seeming to be a little bit weaker. But notice when they are confronted, some will not turn loose. others can see, what is that phrase called, the handwriting on the wall, and decide that, okay, you know, if I want to come out of this alive, I probably shouldn't be president or prime minister or whatever post needs to be vacated. But there are others who don't see that at all, and it becomes for them, it's not so much life or death, it's about winning or losing. And again, it goes back to that warlike mentality. And so...
So they're not sensitized to how other people feel. They're narcissistic, are they not?
Oh, I
think pathological.
Yes. Oh, well, it's very interesting. It's everything is narcissistic, but it's not just the leaders. There are an awful lot of even well-meaning, really beautiful spiritual teacher who spiritual people who get a little narcissistic about their own spiritual growth. And they think, well, I don't have to pay attention to what's going on in the world. After all, that just messes with my mind. And of course, you see, they say, well, that's not my karma. My karma is to just concentrate on the things that will make my life whole and helpful and the way I like it and so on. But of course, if the, what's going on in the world is happening in one's purview, then it becomes his or her karma as well. You know, sometimes people will say to me, well, you know, yeah, I can see so-and-so walking down the street. There's a big hole in front of them. They're going to fall in. But that's their karma. And I say, well, you know, if it's if you're seeing it, it's your karma too.
So you should run up and tell them there's a hole in the road.
Well, you know, years ago, a few years ago anyway, Tulku, Buddhist Rinpoche, had visited Naropa. And he saw something that just shocked him. A young man, a student, had hit a bump in the sidewalk and he fell out of his wheelchair. And none would help him because they thought it was his karma. And so he really took them on about how this is a very, very basic understanding of karma. That, you know, that if it's if something is happening in front of your view, it is your karma. It was your karma to be there at that time and see it. And so basically, one of the levels of narcissism that I think is unrecognized by many spiritual people is their tendency to want to deny that anything is going on for them. Oh, the world may be a mess, but, you know, I just keep my mind right and I'm okay. Now, the interesting thing is that at one level, there is truth in that. It's just not at the level they might be applying it, because they're probably coming from some level of denying that anything out there has anything to do with them. They're seeing themselves as completely separate, you see?
So you're seeing that if we're all sitting here visualizing and visualizing, it is not enough. Is that what you're saying?
It is where we begin.
Okay.
And it is a very important beginning. And if you've been following the meditations on the Earth Healing Day website, which we're gearing up for another Earth Healing Day, it'll be celebrated on the 14th of August this year. But every month since our Earth Healing Day last year, we've picked out a place or a topic that needed collective meditational energy. And every month that's changed. It's been a different meditation. People can download it or they can just listen to it on the website. And basically the idea was to get massive numbers of people helping the earth. And basically it's very interesting because at let me just say that since the big event last year, we've only had about 200 people fall away from this work, or at least those are the ones that said they had us take them off their email, even though they went all the way through last year. So what's happened, which that's pretty remarkable, actually, when you stop and think about it, because when an event is over, often people are done with it and they'll come back later or whatever. They get on with their lives. They forget about it. But what we're seeing happening is that these things, not only, there's two parts of it. One is actually helping. The other is raising the awareness of the connections of all. And so, well, this month we're working on compassionate support and healing energy, sending it to people the world over who are victims of floods and tornadoes this year. Last month we were actually working on mitigating the amount of radioactivity that's in the air. And we're probably going to go back to doing some more of that because it was never more needed than now. And to give you another example of the spiritual narcissism, I had a person come to me and say, oh, well, you know, I'm at level such and such. I don't have to worry about that radiation. Spiritual people shouldn't worry about it. Well, that means they don't understand the body very well. some very, very spiritual people have died of radiation poisoning. Mm-hmm. And it is this kind of narcissistic thing of thinking, I'm so far ahead that I don't have to worry about that, that often causes people to lose compassion for the people that are suffering.
Yeah, we judge one another's illnesses sometimes in the spiritual mode. I'm aware of that, yes.
And you see, that's a remarkable opportunity for compassion that may be missed in the act of judging, might it not?
Yes, I think that's one of the most poignant pieces that you just gave us. It's wonderful. Spiritual narcissism, I'm going to sit and chew that like a piece of gum and really understand my own role in it, because I think that's the only route out, isn't it?
It is the only route out. And you know, in it somewhere is this deep and wonderful understanding that each person is just another piece of yourself. Now, that self is not the same self that lives a lifespan. It's a much broader definition of self. But until that is really understood by many, many people, I would suspect that we're going to have continued problems, because that the mind comes up, and you know how it can just get in the way of the most wonderful things at times? But it gets in the way of one's own transformation.
Well, I think I just want to ask you something here that's related to this. Is, first of all, I think fear is the big thing that gets in the way of the minds. And with all the systems coming apart and all the weather things, and people don't know quite what the mortgage swindles, the real estate business, the music industry, the television and radio, all of that. Everything is coming apart, and the countries. And people are afraid, aren't they? Can you help us with that?
Well, yes. And I would say, just from the standpoint of being intelligent, they have a reason to be afraid. Now, at another level, because they're spiritual beings that are eternal, and because none of this can ultimately change who they are, or let's say nothing can really destroy one's essence, there's a much larger reason why not to be afraid. And yet, it's the working out of the intricacies of a planet that is under incredible stress. I mean, when you just think about it, if you go back to 2009 and 2010, and you look at the earthquake activity. Mm-hmm. It was amazing, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
So this says that...
It's not over yet.
No, the Earth's body at its very core is trembling and quaking. And then things become reactive to it, whether it's weather, whether it's wind patterns. All of these things are Earth's elementals, you might say, mm-hmm. While they're really at some level seeking to balance things out. But when one gets really out, for instance, when the volcanoes go off and over and over and over, you could say that the fire element is out of control. And that plays off the earth element. When those tectonic plates move, it can create a great deal of pressure that blows through a mountain somewhere. But we have the earth element, which has to do with the earth's body proper. Yeah. We have, next would be the water element, and certainly we've seen an awful lot of, at least what appears to be a water element out of control this year, somewhat toward the end of last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the fire element. Certainly there's forest fires or wildfires raging in certain states right now. But we also have to look at the volcanic activity, which changes the face of the earth, you see. Mm-hmm. And then we can even go to the air element. And if you just look at the tremendous winds, in fact, here in New Mexico, they usually have fairly windy Marches in April, but it started in late January, and the wind has blown virtually every day since then. And it's supposed to be done supposed to slow down in May and then be done in June, and it's not slowing down at all. And this is just one area. But when you...
I heard that's true in Vegas right now as well.
It is.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, and part of it, you see, it's very interesting because this is what's called a La Nina year, and that's supposed to be a dry and warmer year than normal. Well, certainly it hasn't been dry in certain parts of the Midwest and the southeastern seaboard, has it?
Or here in the Northwest, we're wet,
yes.
wet. Woof.
Well, but as you go
and
back,
not
look
warm.
Yes, look what happened to Australia earlier in the year.
Oh,
terrible
right. And
flooding,
New Zealand. Oh, yes.
What happened in the Philippines? In Colombia and Bolivia, these countries have experienced rain all year long. Mm-hmm. And it had terrible mudslides. Certainly the one in Brazil that brought down, I don't know, 1,000, 8,000 homes or something destroyed in mudslides. Mm. I mean, so we can really see that when, and in the mudslide, you've got the water and the earth element coming together and getting sort of dually out of control. Mm. So clearly, the message is that the planet herself, her underpinnings are being shaken.
Mm-hmm.
And she is trying to identify herself at a higher, or let's say a more elevated vibrational frequency, to put it in technical terms. But you could say it's just like a person trying to see themselves in their enlightened reality. Mm-hmm. Because until they can see that reality, it can't come about. But unfortunately, until something comes about, they can't see the reality. If you blow this up to the proportions of a planet, that's what's going on. And I think we could say that maybe Earth, or her spirit, Gaia, has kind of had it with all of the corruption and the greed that humans have been able to perpetrate.
Mm-hmm.
This, it kind of sullies or soils her pristine nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we do it when the Gulf was loaded with all of that oil. And, of course, those of you paying attention know there's no way the crisis is over yet. They're still using Core Exit to try and clean it up. Well, that's not helping anything.
Yeah, and I heard that the dispersants were making the fish and the people working there crazy.
Not only crazy, very, very sick. Some have already died, and probably more will.
Oh, it's
but
dreadful.
You see, this is another part of the... I guess you would say the tendency to shield people from the truth. You know, there are dead spots on the ocean floor that not only will plant flora not grow, but the fish won't even come into that area to eat. It's so toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like this, unless you are in the presence of the scientists who are studying it, you're likely not going to hear anything about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
There is a belief on the part of some of your leaders that the best option is to keep people uninformed. That way, this is how the theory goes, they won't be afraid. Well, the truth is, people are afraid anyway because they see what's going on. This is not the same planet that they knew even 10 years ago.
Well, it's interesting because I've seen as an intuitive, and I've heard others say this, that it seems like as we learn to radiate at a higher level, as we learn to raise our frequencies, it's almost like there are two Earths, that one Earth will go down and one Earth will rise. Do you see any of that, or is that just a little more spiritual narcissism?
No, I do see it. I would probably put it just a little bit differently. I would say that the greater the potential for enlightenment, the greater also the potential for endarkenment. And what does this mean?
Sense.
If you look at the lives of some individuals who, at least now they are telling you about their enlightenment experiences, you'll find that they went through very dark times just prior to the enlightenment. And there are those who have studied this whole thing, like how do people get to the point where they can break through? The nice version is, or the one everyone wants to hear about, is that one is so filled with bliss and light that they break into another reality. Well, that does happen for some. But I think equally as many people break through the barriers of the conscious mind through a state we could only call morbidity.
Oh, my
goodness. In other
words,
they feel like the ego is just crushed until there's nothing left. And when the ego is finally completely crushed, their true nature shines forth.
Isn't that the route to initiation?
Oh, that's the initiation. That's it. When that breaking apart happens, you could say something. Well, if you go back to the initiatory experiences, say in Egypt, and probably some of our members have or listeners have a little bit of a remembrance about that.
I have.
But basically, in those situations, many people died. You know, who maybe they weren't really ready for initiation, but if you went to your spiritual teacher and you said, I'm ready, I want to do it, and there was a kind of a rule that if an aspirant asked three times, they would be granted an initiatory process. And in those days, they put you in a stone box in a sarcophagus and put you in a place where there was no magnetic field, And basically what happens is that's a point where one can drop or lose all of the history. Well, many people, let's say they weren't clear, and so let's say a person had a fear of, let's say, snakes, or it could be bees. When they get in that box and the creative energies are boosted by the lack or the null magnetic field, then it would seem as if the bees or the snakes would appear right there in the sarcophagus with them. Now, if a person could realize, oh, this is just an unclear place, there can't be any snakes in here, then the snakes would just disappear as quickly as they showed up. But if a person actually believed what they were experiencing, well, many people were pulled out of that initiatory chamber with snake bites all over their bodies, and there were no snakes in the chamber, you see, or bee stings or whatever.
Wow.
And so this is where, when you enter a zone on Earth where there's a null magnetic field, this is where you really can see the power of your thoughts creating your reality. Now, interestingly enough, because there are so many diversions, people don't observe how their thoughts are creating their reality. Maybe a thought comes to that effect, and then the phone rings, or then this, or then that. But when you're lying there in that stone sarcophagus and you cannot move the lid of that, it feels like a tombstone, it was for some, then there's nothing with you but your mind. And then you begin to have the opportunity to see how much it's creating. But when you have a whole planet that is caught up in diversions, you see, and it is. There's just so much going on that it's very difficult for most people to set aside some time every day to watch their mind. How does it work? What is it making of this? What I'm experiencing right now, is it real or is it only really experienced? And that's a very fine hair for many people to split. Is it real? Is it really, really real? Or is it just something I am really experiencing? Now, one does. Those people did experience snake bite, you see. But in reality, there were no snakes. And so this is the kind of shift that's trying to happen for the whole planet, to see beyond the levels of illusion that play out through collective mind. But the closer one gets to that,
the harder it is.
What also creeps up are these potentials, weighted about the same degree for endarkenment. And so when you say, will some people go one way and another, I think so. Some people will go for the endarkenment, and others will go for an enlightened planet. And you are actually correct in saying there may be more than one Earth dwelling. I mean, there already is. I think if anybody who is really astute about the kinds of things that go on can say, look at someone who is living in a totally different reality, let's say, than you are. You look at them maybe with compassion. You're just amazed at how different their reality is. Like I see some of this between the Republicans and the Democrats. You know, they live in different realities altogether, and each thinks if they could just educate the other, it would bring them over to their side, but it won't, because people come in with different karma. You have the karma to see in one way. Your neighbor might have the karma to see in what's almost exactly the opposite way. And when you get the extremes on the political spectrum, the ultra-conservative versus the ultra-liberals, they are really living in two different worlds. It's not the same world. Well, what's probably going to happen between now and 2012 is that more and more people who have never even thought in these terms are going to begin seeing the obviousness of just more and more worlds occupying the same space. And the reality, of course, comes from the mind. That's why it's so important to spend some time every day observing your mind. When somebody says something that irritates you, and it's going to happen because people's nerves are a little more stretched and stressed than they have been, than they were 5 years ago, you see? And so when something happens and maybe somebody says something, or maybe, you know, you go out, you're in a hurry, you put the key in the car and it won't start, the battery's dead, what does the mind do? If it gets irritated, that's a good time to look at it. If it gets depressed, that's a really good time to look at it. And you ask yourself, so why is my mind doing this? Why is my mind telling me I should be mad at my car? Or why is my mind telling me it's always like this when I need to get there, the car fails me? Why is my mind taking me to a victim place? You see, until people can really understand the creative magnitude of their own minds, I think it's going to be very difficult to create a planet of peace. Mm-hmm. And so what we're probably going to be seeing, and I don't want to say this for sure because it depends on how people get their lessons and then what shifts they make in the way they use the creative powers.
Well, do you think the shifts are instant, are in the moment these days because of people's awareness of what you're just talking about?
Well, some are, yes.
Yeah.
But you see, if people would set aside some time each day to look at their mind, they would be totally amazed. You see, if a person feels and thinks in an impoverished way, the mind will create the circumstances for him or her to continue that experience. In fact, it will fight with anybody who tries to give it something else. On the other hand, if you see a mind that is negatively judgmental, it could be a certain group of people, maybe it's a race, or maybe it's the people on the other side of the political aisle, or maybe it's the people on the other side of the football stadium. When the mind polarizes like that, you can learn a great deal by watching it, and all you have to do is say, so how is it? My mind is making it up that my side is the right side. If a person will just allow for that question, you don't have to answer it. You just have to ask the question. Mm-hmm. The mind will begin to get what you really want, which is leaky margins. You want there to be places in this box that you call your mind. You want it to get very leaky so that your impressions can leak out, but other people's impressions can leak in. Hmm. And when the margins of that box are riddled with holes so that consciousness is flowing, rather than is trying to be held or contained in the concrete box of the ego, you see. I mean, pretty soon, as the consciousness grows, that concrete box is going to feel very, very small. If it feels so small and so oppressive, it can even lead to a drastic event, such as one taking one's own life or taking the life of another person.
Yeah, because taking one's own life is sometimes a consequence of not belonging, which is what people are fighting to do, right?
Well, I don't know that it's a consequence of not belonging, because, you see, that's a notion they've made up in their own mind, isn't it?
Yes.
Who or what in the universe could possibly say anybody doesn't belong here? Every person is a child of this universe, so they all belong. Now, how they feel about that notion varies really radically from one person to another. And you're right, a lot of people do feel they don't belong. And if this inspires them to find a bigger picture to belong to, maybe I don't belong in my family, or if I feel I don't belong in my society, maybe I can find some comfort in belonging to this universe. It wants me here, mm-hmm. whether I feel that or not. The universe wants me here, you see? And so if I can use my sense of not belonging in a smaller picture to thrust me into a bigger picture, then something is working pretty well. Mm-hmm. But if I use my sense of not belonging to get more and more helpless, to participate less and less, to give less and less, because I feel that I don't belong and nobody is giving to me. You know, it's a very interesting thing because my hue and cry for years is that, you know, many people in the psychological world will say that the most basic human need is the need to be loved. And while that is very important, I think the most basic human need that even trumps that one is the need to love. If a person loves enough, then whether or not they're loved back doesn't even come on the screen. They don't suffer from not being loved if they are loving enough, you see?
Well, no, that's a wonderful thing to think about, to feel about.
And it's the same way with giving. Mm-hmm. Many people, particularly when they're feeling stretched financially, when they're feeling, impotent to do the kinds of things in their life they would want to do that has maybe to do with the economy. Maybe they've lost their job. Maybe they've lost their home, and on and on and on. And they're when all of that feels so crushing, and it does, it is really experienced, you bet. We don't want to deny that at all. But if one allows that to crush them, then you see what shuts down is their heart. Mm-hmm. And they might not, or they might miss, all the opportunities that come to them to do some goodness in the world. Maybe it's giving of money, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's giving of time. Maybe it's giving of compassion. Maybe it's giving of goodwill. All these are attributes of a generous heart. And yet we can see people now who are suffering in what appears to be a non-generous society or a non-generous financial situation, shutting down and letting themselves be kind of microcosm of what they believe they're experiencing in the world.
Which is very defensive, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in the final analysis, this sounds harsh for some people, you know, or to some people, but in the final analysis, if one is suffering, he or she has decided that they're suffering. They have somehow taken a reference point and used it as a pillar for their sense of being. That's not really helping them. In fact, it's probably causing them to suffer even more. Mm-hmm. And this is why, particularly in times when radical transformation is going on the planet, it is so important, just for one's own sanity, to be watching the mind. Where does my mind trip me up? I'm going along, I'm having a good day, in comes this thought, maybe it's a negative thought about another person, and instead of just letting the thought go through, I mean, after all, the mind is really like a radio. It's picking up frequencies. You think some of your thoughts up, but you don't think all of your thoughts up. In fact, most of them are thoughts that are floating to you from a prior experience and have nothing to do with the now.
Or even from the collective, aren't they?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They just float through. And then a person might grab onto it. And so they go, let the mind run with how bad this person has been to them. And maybe they lose an hour and a half thinking about this. Mm-hmm. And only thing that's happening is they're suffering. Those are not thoughts that feel good.
Wow.
So what we have to do is learn to just let the thoughts go through. You can't stop them because you're receiving thoughts from many, many sources, particularly when there are wars going on in the world, you see. It sort of increases a warring mentality all over the world, mm-hmm. not for every single person. But I can tell you there's some very lovely people I know who are totally into peace consciousness. Maybe they've even been on activist lines and so on. And they're finding they're having real difficulty in their personal relationships. You see, and it's not that they are having lapses where they suddenly don't believe in peace anymore. Mm-hmm. But in the moment, because of whatever stressors they're contending with, the mind comes up with a notion that the other person did something to them. And often, you know, let's just say the battlefield is really in the mind. I think when there are a lot of wars going on the planet, what I see is more and more people get into thinking who's right and who's wrong. Mm-hmm. They can't help it because they're picking up these war vibes. Each side thinks they're right and the other one is wrong, and they're so convinced of that that they're exchanging bullets and shells and bombs and whatever else in this part of the world, that part of the world. Mm-hmm. All of that energy, of course, comes into the psyches of everyone. And so they find themselves, while they're still taking a strong stand for peace, but they may find themselves caught in some very uncomfortable interactions with someone they really care about. And it seems as if the two are polarized. Probably, in the big picture, they're not polarized. some little event arose, and that became kind of like the trigger on the bomb, you see?
Mm-hmm. And so, also, in all these times of loss, so many people are losing what was their identity and their security definition. I think there's a lot of victim judgment stuff in that as well, right?
There is. And, you know, it's, or let's put it this way, that's how the mind uses the circumstance.
That's how the mind uses it. Excellent. Thanks.
Yes. And so if one can be in the circumstance, and, oh, there was this, this was right after the tornado in Joplin, and on one of the news stations, I happened to catch this young woman who was going into Joplin to help people that had lost their homes. Come to find out, she just lost hers.
Oh, my.
But she was pretty neutral about it.
Oh, really?
And basically, she had a sense of purpose. She felt she was needed to help, and she could deal with the loss of her house later.
Wow.
Now, she was not in denial. She was very, she said, yes, it hurts. It hurts a great deal, but I'm not thinking about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit different than denial, because in denial, one is trying not to think about it at all.
Right. And tell me this. Are we getting more? We keep hearing we get more and more other dimensional support than we've ever had before. Is that right? I mean, are we being infused with a higher consciousness at times, like maybe in her case? Or,
well, the support is certainly there. However, sometimes, and this is why there's so much of it around, in times of stress, it's harder for people to receive that support than it might not be. See, if their mind were completely neutral and open, and they could go out and look at all the ways they're being supported today, not for the rest of their life, today. And they find that even just a little thing, the car starts. It didn't get washed away in a flood, and I don't have to go look for it. It starts. And I can just feel the universe supporting me with that. A lot of people say, well, that's not the universe. I pay for the gas. I pay for the repairs. But that's a false notion of the whole, that's missing the point, you see. If you get up and the sun is shining, and it's, let's say it's been raining for a week, and the sun is shining, you should feel that as support. Take that as a sign that everything in the universe is okay.
Hmm.
And particularly, you see, as you look around and you see systems that are not okay, some of them need to fall, frankly.
We want that. I know we do. It's just scary, isn't it?
It is scary. Mm-hmm. It is scary. And we get into denial if we say, oh, well, it needs to fall anyway. That's not the way to do it. You tell yourself, wow, look what I am being called to witness.
Uh-huh.
I must have come as a high witness from the spiritual realm to bear witness to the price tags that many people are going to pay to get their lessons. I am here, and basically you should be thinking, whenever you're talking to someone who is going through a very difficult time, in your own mind you think, wow, the universe has asked me to witness this person's pain or their loss. Maybe they lost a home in a flood. Maybe they lost their crops for a year. And to think, somehow I have been called as an agent of the universe to witness this profound moment. And if you can just be a witness, now certainly you're connecting with them and so on, but you're not allowing yourself to be overcome with what's happened to them or what's going on in the world. You're just saying, you know, this is part of my divine mission. I was asked to come here at this time so I could be a witness to the prices people pay to get their lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And it is utterly humbling. It is for me all the time. You know, I see people going through tremendous things, and many of my students come to me with inconceivable problems they're faced with.
Mm-hmm.
And I find I want to give them comfort. I want to point them in the right direction so that they can make the most out of the situation that's before them and all of that. But at the same time, you see, I see the God that is within them that right now, for whatever reason, is being caused to suffer. And what I want to do is to help them transcend suffering, not deny it, transcend mm-hmm. it. And that's what was so remarkable about the young woman. She was in her maybe mid-30s in Joplin, who didn't even live in Joplin but was in the path of the tornado and came into town to help the people who had lost their homes.
Wow.
She was a high witness because it had happened to her. She knew she could help others, you see.
And when you say transcend suffering, it's accepting the feelings and, let me see, transcend is like moving yourself out of it by helping your mind look at what's real? Or
what I actually mean with the word transcend is cut through.
Okay.
Suffering is a state of mind. People think it has to do with what's going on outside of their self, but that's not really true. Mm. Because this young woman wasn't suffering, and she was not in denial about what had happened to her. She had transcended it or cut through.
She's a high being, that girl.
Yeah, well, she had purpose.
You bet.
This is why having some sense of purpose in one's life is very important, you see?
Yes, it is.
The purpose was bigger than the loss.
Yeah. I unfortunately have to end this, and of course I never like to end it with you because there's so much to learn from you and with you, and I thank you for that. Can you give people information on what's coming up, that your Earth Healing Days and so on?
Well, once again, this year we will create the Om Heard Round the World, mm-hmm. where basically on the 14th of August, from the time of noon to 1 p.m. in every time zone around the world, people will be stopping what they're doing and just concentrating on sending healing energy to the planet. Now we certainly Om is certainly comes out of both Buddhist and Hindu tradition. So in the East they get this right away. In the West some people are put off by it. They say, "Well, I don't say Om in my spiritual practice." That's okay. Those of you who Om is a very powerful syllable for dismantling the things that need to be dismantled and allowing the new to come in. But so we have, last year we had a woman that wrote a liturgy for people that wanted a liturgical application on that day. We also had a Presbyterian priest in Illinois who opened her church all day long for people to come in and pray, but particularly from 12 to 1. We had people in New Zealand that danced solidly for the entire hour, seeing that their feet were inputting healing energy into the earth with every
step. Wonderful. That sounds like fun, too.
So, yes. And so, basically, what we're encouraging people all around the world is from 12 to 1 in their time zone to spend that hour for Earth, sending healing to her, oming, chanting. And when we did the Earth Healing Day in Denver last year, we were joined by some wonderful Native American drummers and singers, and they sort of did their chant, and the group omed, and it all just went together so beautifully. Mm-hmm. And in Santa Fe, we're planning a number of things. I can't tell you yet because they're not set up, but basically there probably will be a number of different Native American presences to contribute their type of ceremony, as well as some of the other major religions of the world as well. So for 1 hour, for people to just give that to Earth. After all, she has supported everyone through countless lifetimes.
Brilliant idea. And it's Vajra, V-A-J-R-A, flame.org?
Well, actually, you can just go to the Earth Healing Day site. It's www.earthhealingday.com.
Okay.
And we're in the process of updating the site to make it current this year. It has really been reflective of what's gone on all year since our last one. But anyway, there's still good information on it. And if you want to get the e-newses that come out, all you have to do is sign on as some people want to be listed as partners. And there's a partner page. No fee or anything at this point. You get a little free advertising if you want to. But then other people just want to be on the email list, and so they get notifications every month if you're on that list.
That's wonderful.
Not only can you go to the site and get the monthly meditation, but you also get the articles that are written each month about the monthly focus. So as I said earlier, we've really had a huge success in people all around the world joining in and being a part of it in their time zone. And what that does is that creates a 24-hour embrace of the planet in love and healing energy.
Wonderful. Well, I thank you so much for this hour of time with you, and I love getting your newsletters. They're wonderful. Very inspiring.
Good.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right. Good night.